All right, everybody, it is time for another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. But before we dive in to our awesome, awesome guest and conversation today, I want to remind you guys of two things. And the first one is that if you go to crypto101insider.com, you can join our private community. Here's where we have our model portfolio and all of our top picks. We also have Crypto 101 University, where we have hours and hours and hours of written and video content that explains blockchain and explains cryptocurrency in a very bite-sized and easy to understand way. And we have a weekly newsletter that goes out and quarterly state of crypto addresses that go out. There is just a ton of value packed into this every which way. So I want you guys first to go to crypto101insider.com today, if you haven't already. I also want to remind you guys that Pizza Mind and I recently just finished a book. It took 11 months of our lives to write, and we're calling it Crypto Revolution, Your Guide to the Future of Money. We walk you through this fascinating world of cryptocurrencies and blockchain, and it's part history book, it's part instructional guide, and it's going to really show you guys why cryptocurrencies are globally disruptive and how they're going to actually change in real life and in real terms the way that we buy and sell and even live. We include a bunch of how-tos on getting started with your first exchanges. We give you tips on how to safely buy and sell and store cryptocurrencies, as well as how do we evaluate potentially good cryptocurrencies. And the best part of the book is that we're giving it away for free. All you have to do is pay for shipping and handling. So go to cryptorevolution.com and pick up your copy today. All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is that time of the week. It is Crypto 101 Podcast. I am joined here, as always, by my notorious co-host and best buddy, Mr. Pizza Mind. How you doing over there, buddy?
It is a scorching hot summer here in Texas, but I'm finally getting settled in to this crypto winter, and it's starting to feel kind of cozy. You know, this is the time where we really get to research, learn, and real wealth is built in market conditions like this. For those of you who put the time in and do the research and aren't scared out, just like me and Bryce. So all of you listening, you're in the right place, and I'm excited. What are we going to learn about today?
Oh man, we are going to be learning about a whole bunch of stuff, not only just, you know, crypto specific stuff, but we're going to zoom out actually a little bit into even the Internet of Things, which might be kind of a new terminology for some of our listeners who are maybe just pure crypto traders. They're like, I already know about the internet and I know plenty about things, but what about the marriage between the two? And so we're going to talk to Garrett Kinsman, who's the co-founder of Nodal. And Garrett, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be speaking with you again. I love the new setup on both your guys' side. So great to be here.
Good stuff, man. Yeah, well, why don't we just kind of jump in a little bit about your background? And, you know, I kind of want to preface this. You know, the last time we met, I thought it was, you know, it was kind of an epiphany moment for me, because everything that you guys were doing prior to even the blockchain space, you and Misha, who's your co-founder, everything you guys were doing prior to the blockchain space was actually kind of, characterized on the Silicon Valley TV show as well, which was wild to think about. So tell us what that was, I believe, and tell us a little bit about what you're doing now and how that all kind of came to be.
So we started in the decentralized space. So this was kind of before crypto. There was this kind of decentralized mesh space, and it was characterized by BitTorrent, you know, music streaming apps, and an app that we were working on. It was called FireChat. So the Open Garden was the company. I'd actually dropped out of school and got an internship working with Misha, who is now my co-founder. And what we really did was use smartphones as infrastructure. So you could use your phone to send messages between your friends, all without the internet having to work. And so it was a really cool, like, early foray into decentralization and this kind of space. And then as we were doing that, there were a lot of people that were starting to do this like weird crypto thing. People were doing Bitcoin and colored coins popped out, which then evolved into Ethereum. And so we really kind of saw the shift from decentralization into the crypto space, which is really kind of cool to see firsthand being in San Francisco. So what we do now is we do kind of from these teachings that we had was understanding how do we use these smartphones to actually build real infrastructure that we can use for stuff or connecting things or connecting people. And as a result, kind of give a way for anybody with a smartphone to participate in the world of blockchain. So we really want to be the way that the next several billion people onboard to the blockchain world.
Yeah, that's definitely a lot. But when people hear this, they're like, wait, hold on. Connecting device to device without the internet. So are we, you know, would that be just over radio waves, or how does a mesh network actually kind of come together? And, you know, what is that just 101 level?
So kind of in a nutshell, what we do is we use the smartphone that's in your pocket and we turn on the Bluetooth and we use that to connect and find nearby smart devices. So this could be appliances. This could be, you know, a Bluetooth device in a package or a sensor like a smart meter. And we use that to move little bits of data. So this crowd of smartphones, these people kind of work together to create this crowdsourced network just to connect stuff, little tiny objects. But ultimately, these networks can become big enough that everything is kind of interconnected, and then you can turn off the underlying internet and things still work. I think we're still a bit of a ways from that happening, but that was kind of the underlying dream that got Misha and I interested in mesh networking and kind of wireless networks almost a decade ago.
And I remember Open Garden. And when I stumbled onto that, I thought this was the coolest thing. But yeah, it was very, very early for its time. I think, you know, mesh networking is still really early now.
Oh, yeah.
There's several people in the crypto space that are hardcore about it and have kind of made their own. And it seems like different corners of the world are slowly like exploding with this mesh network. And hopefully at some point they'll intersect and be able to be interoperable. What do you think the time horizon is until we really have like a big worldwide mesh network of all of these Bluetooth and private Wi-Fi and satellite linked stuff all over the city? I mean, is this 10 years away, 30 years away, 50 years away for remote regions only?
So we're doing it with Bluetooth now. So we've got, you know, hundreds of thousands of smartphones running around today. We hope to increase that significantly before the end of the year. But we have this very basic Bluetooth network. Again, it's only good for small amounts of data. We're using it mostly with enterprise customers. But we've proven that this kind of crypto economic model can work, which is really exciting. In terms of how does this evolve into a future of, you know, huge hyper-connected objects and mesh networks spreading across cities, I think it's going to take probably 3 to 5 years to start to see this. We're starting to see companies like Helium and Pollen build these kind of base stations, but it's expensive. Takes a lot of work. It's unclear if the economics can work at scale because you're trying to replicate, you know, a big telco. The beauty of nodals is just software. We take existing hardware and we kind of light it up. But again, that dream of, you know, rooftop meshes providing internet for everybody is really interesting. But I think it'll take more time, mostly because today it's really hard to build hardware. If I want to build a hardware box, it's going to take at least a year just to get the parts. So civilization is really not in a good place right now if you want to build custom hardware. And you really need custom hardware to do that high-level mesh stuff really well. So it's coming. And we think nodal is really the first step to incentivizing these types of networks to grow and doing it just with software.
Man, there's so much to unpack there. And it's like, imagine if, you know, everybody's phones and Bluetooth devices, I mean, everybody in the world kind of like has a smartphone. And like, I say that, like, not even, you know, like one of my friends went to Africa a few months ago and he kind of came back and he was like, dude, I was so surprised that there were folks in these villages and they were just in, you know, you know, very little clothes, no work, just dirt everywhere. And he goes, they were on their freaking smartphones in the middle of the village. And he was so blown away. And that was a huge eye-opening moment for me, where it's like, you know, Elon Musk, Starlink is going out. People are getting internet in all these crazy ways. And so the infrastructure is actually there. And one of the things, it's like, you know, Africa is actually, you know, they don't have any landlines, but they all have like smartphones. And it's like they kind of did like this quantum shift. And so what I see from Nodal is just being able to kind of, you know, retrofit all of these devices that are everywhere with software that could allow, you know, truly peer-to-peer disintermediated communication. And it's really powerful, but why? Like, what's the purpose, right? Let's think about some use cases, or, you know, I think people at home are kind of thinking like, well, we have the internet, it works fine. Like, why do we need this? And what does it enable?
So we get so excited by the technology. It's easy to go down these rabbit holes.
Totally.
So I'm really thankful we have a team that kind of pulls us out. I was actually in India, just as a side note. I used to live in India for about 2 years for the launch of Reliance Jio. And so the internet, the number of people that had access to the internet went up by like 4x or something crazy. The internet consumption of India spiked because this company launched the largest 4G network in the world and gave away SIM cards. And so I actually witnessed this deployment of seeing people with no phone go from really high speed 4G that was almost free. So I have, you know, vivid memories of actually running through the Himalayas with my friends streaming Spotify, because my friend had one of these SIM cards, and you could be in the middle of nowhere in India streaming Spotify and listening to, you know, some crazy electronic music. And I realized, I said, wow, you know, this is transformative. And again, like you mentioned, the rest of the world's mobile first. So, you know, people don't have, you know, desktop computers, they're on their phone. And building a product that is designed for the desktop is like, you know, that's so last decade. And if you look at the crypto world today, you know, you really need your computer to interface with crypto. You got to have a desktop, you got to have a ledger. It's really hard. And so very few people are actually designing mobile first blockchain experiences. They're starting to get it. But we at Nodal, we really want to be mobile first, because we believe we can use this network we're building to onboard a lot of people. Now, you mentioned kind of what does Nodal do? What are the use cases? And the first use case is what we call a smart mission. And the mission is to use your phone to connect the things around you, kind of locate and connect. And our first product is kind of like an Apple AirTag, but for enterprise. And so one of our first big customers is insurance tracking of vehicles. So they actually put a little Bluetooth tag in the car. And then if the vehicle's stolen, the owner can actually do a query through our network to help find that vehicle. And so it's really kind of an asset tracking use case. And we think we can expand that to a lot more devices.
That was really cool. Now, when we think of Bluetooth, you know, maybe we have like a little portable speaker in a room or some earbuds in. If we walk to the next room, it starts to break up. By the time we get to the other side of the house, there's no signal left.
Yeah.
What kind of tweaks to this Bluetooth stack, or there's any kind of specialized Bluetooth that you guys are using to allow it to work, you know, across an entire town?
Yeah. So think, we're very short range focused. So think about all the things that want to connect to the internet but can't today because it's too expensive. So the cost today of, you know, putting a Bluetooth tag into your device is about $1 at scale. So anything that can generate $1 worth of data will become connected to the internet, and that price will just shoot down. And so think about like a shipping pallet or a smart meter, you know, that's measuring your electricity usage. This is transmitting little bits of data, and then as you walk past with your phone, it picks up that data. This is something that's almost impossible or prohibitively expensive if you use cellular. But also, if you have hundreds or, you know, thousands of devices in a city that are all transmitting at the same time, then basically they all start to interfere with each other. It's like everyone's shouting over each other. And so the short range of Bluetooth is actually a huge benefit, because we can pack the number of devices that we can run in a city to be much, much higher. And so we think that for a lot of things, like you interacting with a vehicle or you interacting with an object like a door or a park object, it's going to be short range communication. It's going to be, you know, me interacting with you. And for that, you want just a short range connection. You want something that only goes a few hundred meters for privacy, but also just for making the network work. So I think the future is really this kind of proximal connectivity. And that's going to enable a lot of really cool stuff.
So it's kind of like a game of telephone, but the information doesn't get lost from peer to peer because of the blockchain keeping it truthful.
Exactly. Yeah. And we think there's this whole kind of anything that needs to be connected right away, it's going to have a SIM card. It just makes sense. But for things that just want to send a little bit of data, and even if it takes an hour or two for it to reach the cloud, that's okay. And we think that that could be a much, much larger subset of, you know, smart devices or IoT, Internet of Things, as people call it, than the kind of classical, you know, high bandwidth connectivity. Just because adding a SIM card is so expensive and it's a pain in the butt. I like to say, imagine going to your telco, the experience that you have with your phone going to a telco, and then you multiply that times a million devices. So it's really, really hard to connect.
Now, where does cryptocurrency come in? And, you know, you said something that was kind of at the beginning of the presentation, or at the beginning of the podcast, and you mentioned the word incentivization. Mm-hmm. So is that kind of why there's a cryptocurrency here? Is it in order to incentivize people? Hey, come on the network, you know, connect to other devices, and the network will, you know, pay you crypto tokens in order to do that? Or is there some other kind of concept behind it?
So the blockchain or crypto is really important for two main reasons, for the incentivization and for security. So when we had built FireChat several years ago, there wasn't really an incentive for people to keep their phones running and to keep this kind of mesh network of phones live. So, you know, these networks would form during events and they'd kind of disappear.
Like the Burning Man one.
Exactly. And so, you know, there was no real incentive because messages aren't worth very much. You know, you and I, we're not going to pay to use a messaging app. It's already free. But if you look at these messages from machines, say, you know, analytics off of a refrigerator or a coffee machine or the temperature, this is super valuable information. And so we can use this demand for connectivity to incentivize anyone with the smartphone to earn a little bit of crypto. So what we did was built an app called Nodal Cash. And so you can earn cryptocurrency on your phone just by, you know, running the app. And by running the app, you're helping to connect these nearby devices. And so we call this the economy of connectivity. And this is really interesting because before this, we didn't really know how to make money with the internet. People are using ads. You know, all the big tech companies today are basically just show you ads and monetize you as a user. We're not interested in you. We want to monetize what's around the phone. We want to protect your personal data. And so this economy of connectivity is kind of this engine that drives the network. And then we use the blockchain to essentially protect your privacy and to protect the privacy of the devices that we connect. That's what's so cool, is because we can prove, you know, that we're protecting your privacy. We can prove that the data coming off of a sensor is authentic and is correct, and then route that data. So we're just getting started, but we think there's a lot more that can be done in this space for privacy and then protecting people's information.
Yeah. And I think this is kind of one of the key hallmarks of Web3, right? Or Web 3.0 versus Web 2.0. Yeah. How do you, so like, you know, I think people are like, man, like I cannot imagine a world where I don't get ads in my apps. Like people just can't imagine that. But is that kind of the promise of Web 3? And if so, give us a little bit of color around like why that shift is happening and how.
So we think that the incentive structure around advertising can be a bit dangerous because we've seen all of the products,
totally,
all of the experiences, even all of the laws, even all of the regulation around privacy is actually designed to keep these advertising companies alive. Because if you regulate them out of existence, then, you know, you don't have these big tech companies. And so it's a bit dangerous because you get these feedback loops that may not be so good for your mental health, but may also not be good for civilization at scale. And so we're thinking, you know, how do you shift people away from that? How do we actually protect your privacy? And instead of monetizing you, we monetize the fact that you have a really powerful supercomputer in your pocket and with a radio. and that this radio on the phone can connect to other things and actually create real value. So we think this economy of connectivity can be quite disruptive. And we're actually partnering with apps. So people can run the Nodal Cash app on their phone, but they can also run the Nodal SDK into a game or a video streaming app. And now, instead of having to look at ads, you just say, hey, do you want to share your Bluetooth anonymously? And you hit OK. And now, while you're streaming a video, you're actually helping participate in the network. And so it's kind of a wild experiment in shifting the economics of the internet, but we think it can work. And we think that this can be really transformational to how we experience the internet.
And you're not alone in thinking that. There's many other projects out there that have that same mindset that are trying to run similar experiments, mm-hmm. not exactly the same, but if there are enough people think this is a good idea, eventually it's going to become something.
Yeah.
You know, in 2020, the theme was mass adoption in crypto. Mm-hmm. 2021 was the year of interoperability. This year, 2022, the narrative is all about Web3. Yeah. Is 2023 going to be the year of IoT, or do you think perhaps all of the above?
I think 2023 is going to be the year of mobile-first blockchain experiences. Like, if you look at where everybody's going, they realize that, like, you know, I can't use Ethereum on my phone easily.
No, it's a nightmare.
You know, try using, you know, a token swap on your phone. I mean, it's really hard. So I think everything's going to go, they're going to realize, okay, wow, you know, crypto's hard. Let's make it simple. Let's make it one click. And we're going to see all these really interesting experiences build out on the phone. If you look at Solana's quite literally building a phone, you look at all these apps that are these token projects that are coming out with apps. So I think next year's 2023 is going to be the year that crypto becomes accessible for more people. I hope that we can set an example with that and actually create a way for anyone with a phone to earn crypto on their device. Because if you look at a lot of these other token projects that are kind of mobile first, say, you know, Run to Earn or Play to Earn, a lot of it is, again, based on advertising. You know, you walk around, those companies will sell that data and then they pay you in crypto. And so we're fundamentally different. We're, you know, you're connecting objects. We're actually protecting your privacy. And then you earn crypto based on this network that you're building. So we see that as kind of how we stand out amongst a lot of these other projects.
You know, you mentioned the Solana phone. And I think that's a really interesting point to kind of come back to, because, you know, they're not only in the business of building like blockchains and software, now they're actually coming out with hardware. And I remember from our past conversations, like, you know, you kind of started off as like a hardcore hardware guy. So do yeah. you kind of see the Solana phone? Like, what's the angle there? Are they like, you know, why are they doing that?
I mean, we love, you know, hardware and we love phones. We were actually on the first HTC. It was the first blockchain phone. So HTC came out with a blockchain phone and we were on that with the Nodal app. I think what they're doing is pretty cool. It's hard to pull off, man. It's really hard to pull off a good, you know, mobile phone experience. And it's even harder to make money with it.
And it's hard to beat Apple. I mean, that's their game.
I mean, Apple is like, you know, Apple is the most powerful organization in the world. And so it's really, really, really tough to build a good experience. I think the trick more is in the software and in the app experience. And until you really nail that app experience, it's, you know, building a phone isn't going to do much. So I think the first step is really to build the most powerful app experience that you can.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, you could have the best phone in the world, but if there's nothing you can do with it, mm-hmm. What are you going to do? I remember, you know, a long, long time ago when Sega Saturn first came out, and this was like the leap from like 8-bit video games into, mm-hmm. you know, what was, you know, 3D or virtual reality at that time is what it was touted. But yeah. There were like no games for it. There was like no one that we could build a game for it. And it was quickly, yeah. you know, gone as soon as it arrived. So I definitely agree. And, you know, we're seeing all these ecosystem funds now for these layer one blockchains, where not only are they raising money to build their product, but then they're raising a ton more money to help others build on top of it. And I feel like that's got to be the model going forward for success. So how do you incentivize more developers to come build on Nodal or include your SDK in their app?
Yeah. So the first step has just been providing this mission to connect devices with Bluetooth. So kind of an enterprise Apple AirTag product. And this we believe is a great offering because it's cheaper than using a SIM card. A lot of people already have phones deployed in their enterprise. They already have a lot of Bluetooth devices. So we kind of help connect the dots there. And we already have people that are integrating, and we're in discussions with a lot more people as well. So we think some real strong demand just around Bluetooth kind of going into this year and into next year. Running the SDK is pretty straightforward, especially once we're listed. Hey, here's an SDK. It doesn't impact privacy, doesn't impact the user experience, and you get crypto. And people are like, it's hard to argue with that. We think there's going to see a lot of adoption with that. We've already signed a couple of really big names. ESTV is one. So they do like video game streaming and drone racing, and they're integrating our SDK to help monetize their app as you're just watching, you know, a drone race. So you don't have to look at ads. And eventually they actually want to give that back to the user. So, you know, maybe there could be a way to do play to or earn to watch. And so it's that's going to be really interesting. And I forgot the other thing you're saying.
Yeah, this whole new economy of just like doing actions online and getting compensated for them, as opposed to, yeah, you know, being monetized by these tech giants. I mean, that it's going to be the way of the future. And it's almost like this artificial, like UBI, like universal basic income, that's like kind of, you know, not necessarily, you know, issued from the government, but it's like, hey, like take back, yeah, control over your actions and earn for playing your games, earn for walking. Like, you know, one of my buddies is doing the step in, like you mentioned, where he's walking, you know, 2 miles or 3 miles a day, and he's earning cash for it. This is the future.
I think it's the future, but you got to think really closely, you know, where is the underlying value coming from, and make sure that they're super open about that, because a lot of these projects aren't super clear about where, you know, where is the underlying value being created for that. And so for us, it's actual customers using our network and building upon it. I was meeting with one of our partners in France, who will hopefully be able to announce soon. And they're like, yeah, you know, We detected a bunch of the beacons using our own, you know, we ran the SDK into their app, but we also had just nodal cache users in Southern France detect some of their devices, which was pretty cool. So regular people just with the nodal cache app were able to find this big company's assets, which is pretty sweet.
Wow.
So we also want to open this up to enable other types of missions to run on our network. So where can we go beyond just Bluetooth and actually leverage all the sensors, all of the capabilities of your smartphone that, you know, just don't exist on Ethereum or other blockchains? You know, you can have a server with all the compute power in the world, but it's not going to have a camera or sensors or a human behind it to do really interesting things. And so we think that that's going to open up a lot of fun use cases around that.
And I think that's really where the world's going, is humans and things participating together. It just doesn't make sense for so many people around the world to work a full-time job. There's not enough full-time jobs to go around, and the ones that are have people locked in there for, you know, 10, 12 hours a day in a lot of countries. And then everyone else is just struggling to survive, but they need an edge. And I think that's where Web3 and Internet of Things comes in, when you can acquire things that help you earn the money you need to live and the resources you need to get by. And, you know, and this is not a new idea. There's an old website called Amazon Mechanical Turk. One of their least known services. But what this is you can log into their website, yep, and they have a bunch of tasks, like thousands of them, that will pay you a few cents or a dime or a nickel just for completing something. And whether it's language translation or copy verification or doing text to, or speech to text or something like that, you can actually earn money like that. And then that's been already reinvented here in the crypto space by a few other projects. But
yeah,
I think that's the way going forward, is getting paid by action rather than just by idle time, where who knows, yeah, what your productivity really is.
And we like to say that the value of the data around your phone is much more valuable than the data that's on your phone. And in that sense, we want to protect what's on your phone. We don't want to, you know, harvest all your information.
Well, what kind of data is around our phone that we should be thinking about?
So a cool thing to do is you open up a Bluetooth scanner. You know, there's a bunch of generic ones, but I mean, anything with Bluetooth, you see coffee machines and you see, I don't know if you can see my screen here, but this is just this is right now scanning all of the hundreds of devices here at our office. We work at home cafes, and it's just like insane amounts of everything. It's, you know, TVs and remote controls and, you know, off-road vehicles and scooters out front. I mean, it's just an insane amount of data.
And maybe like an enterprise company would kind of want that data because they're trying to track like usage statistics, or they're trying to look at certain patterns that are now going to be revealed by this new data.
So we're careful not to give away data that's not owned by the owner of the device. But people that have their own devices, yeah, like scooter companies finding, you know, scooter sharing scooters. And so they don't have to have a SIM card. We think that each human today kind of has their own bubble of connectivity. So I have a smartwatch, it connects to my headphones, to my laptop, but these bubbles don't really interact. And, you know, you have your bubble, your friend has your other bubble, and they don't really interact much. You know, maybe you can airdrop a file between people, but what if you could really open that up? You know, what if you could walk up to a Tesla and it just unlocks, the doors open and you get in, and then, you know, now you're renting a Tesla. So these
or
are
like
these-
you're on your way home from work and you go past like a stoplight, and then, you know, you already have something programmed where it's like every time I pass this landmark on a Wednesday, you know, start heating up my oven at home or something like that.
Yeah. I even pitched to all the ride sharing companies. I used to work in ride sharing when I was living in India. We were competing with Uber. And I said, you know, shouldn't the system know when you're going to want an Uber or a Lyft? So, you know, the dream was you get out of the airport, you walk to the airport, you know, car place, a car pulls up, preferably a Tesla, or a nice car pulls up, the doors open, and you just get in. And there's no, you don't have to fish out your phone. You don't have to like do all these taps, wait for a driver. It just works. You know, by the time you get off the plane, the API is called. It says, hey, Garrett just got off his plane. Route me a Tesla, you know, within 30 to 45 minutes, the average time. So we have all this data and we have all this, this information out there, but it's not being utilized. And even when it is utilized, it's not really protecting the privacy of the user. And so we want to enable what we call data liquidity, where all these devices can kind of talk to each other and do so in a very private way so that we can enable really incredible experiences. Kind of this whole dream of, you know, augmented reality, but actually make it happen using a data that already exists.
Wow. And so kind of hearkening back to a little bit of the infrastructure that you guys are built on. I know recently there was, you know, lots of big announcements. You guys won a parachain slot on the Polkadot network. And there's, you know, very, very limited amount of these coins. And basically for anybody who's like been on Ethereum, maybe you could think of that as like an ERC-20 version, but it's on the Polkadot network. So tell us a little bit about how this whole auction played off, what that meant to you guys, and how are you guys liking the Polkadot ecosystem?
So yeah, Polkadot's awesome. The kind of the way a auction works is you can think of connecting to a parachain kind of like connecting to the internet. So, you know, Nodal is its own blockchain. And then the Polkadot network is its own blockchain. And there's all these other blockchain products within the Polkadot ecosystem. Some of them connect to Ethereum. Some of them connect to Bitcoin. Some of them have cool features like DeFi. And they all kind of connect to each other using the Polkadot network. And so in order to kind of connect, you have to stake a bunch of tokens. And it's this kind of really big, lengthy process. And we actually competed against another project, and it was like really, it was the closest parachain auction that's ever been. And in the end, we won. The community put together like almost $50 million worth of Polkadots, which is their cryptocurrency, and we got our slot. So now we're connected to the Polkadot network, and we can access all these other really interesting projects that are in the ecosystem. And we have this level of shared security. So if you want to hack the Nodal network, you have to hack the Polkadot network and all the other projects that are on it. So it's a really powerful way to have shared security and open access to some interesting features that we would will hopefully support in the future.
Yeah, and I was just going to kind of tack on there, like, you know, as Nodal's looking to get their SDK integrated in all these other applications, it seems like it would be an easy fit to go to some of these other applications that are on the Polkadot network and say, hey, you know, integrate our SDK, and you know, you guys are going to be able to add some, you know, nodal tokens to your treasury, and you could disperse that to your community. I mean, that seems like a shoo-in.
Yeah, the problem is there's not a lot of blockchain projects that have their own native mobile app.
So it's
kind of crazy, you know. If you look
at
the
hopefully
top,
changes.
I think it will change for sure. But if you look at the top, you know, 100 you know, crypto projects out there, and if you look at the official mobile app that they launch, so this would be, for example, Solana having a mobile app, which they don't, which to me is crazy. Nodal comes in within the top 10 of the most you know, native blockchain projects that have their own official mobile app, because there just aren't very many, which to me is insane. This is like companies in the early 2000s not having a website.
I was just going to say that.
like Solana or Ethereum not having an official mobile app that really just shows the world how it works. You know, they're not in control of their own destiny. They're leaving that to other projects to build upon, which is what they might want in some cases. But we think that, you know, the future is mobile. And in order to be in control of your own destiny, you got to have a cool mobile app. It's just the only way.
It's such a moment where you just kind of slap yourself in the forehead and go, oh, yeah, of course. But you're the first person on this podcast to actually mention that, that we need to be mobile first.
It's true.
Which to me is insane. Like
it is insane now that you mention it. It's like, oh my God, how did we miss something so freaking obvious?
Yeah. I mean, I think I saw a lot of this too in India. I went and vacationed last summer. So one of my good friends is running an app called market.xyz, which is like a DeFi project. And we rented an apartment in Goa, which was totally empty. There were no tourists. I think it was still during COVID. And it was just kind of a, he had his apartment next to mine where he was just working like crazy, and he had all his engineers packed in the apartment. And then I had just kind of vacationing and learning about DeFi. And it was really crazy because they were doing trades using their phones. So they would, you know, have one phone, they'd scan their multi-sig wallet, and it was all mobile first. You know, they were doing really complex trades on their platform just with their phones. And I said, this is insane. This is really where the future is heading. And I learned a lot about DeFi and, you know, became more excited about Ethereum. It was really interesting. It's really interesting to see these things.
So outside of IoT and DeFi, you know, what's one thing that you're really, really interested in? And it doesn't even need to be like in regards to blockchain or crypto. I'm just kind of curious, like, what does a genius kind of think about in his spare time?
So I'm really interested in hardware. Now, again, we have a saying, we say hardware kills, like the hardware will kill startups. And in this environment, I mean, you have to be insane to build hardware. But to me, like all software runs on hardware. And we're in a really cool time in history where the software is defining the hardware. So if you look, you know, in the past, the software was defined by the hardware. So you'd build some hardware and then you'd run some code that, you know, runs on the hardware. Now we're in a world where we have some software. People are saying, oh man, wouldn't it be cool if we had this type of software that could do this? And then now they're actually custom designing the hardware for the software. And so you're looking, Tesla's doing this with their self-driving hardware for cars. Apple's doing this for their computers. And so I'm saying, well, what would happen if you start to custom design hardware just for blockchain and for Web3? Mm. And, you know, it's certainly not going to be a little hardware wallet. We have to click a thousand little times to, you know, access and stuff. You know, what does the next generation of that look like? And so I have my head always in antennas and small computers. And I say, well, what is the cheapest way that you can build a computer at the highest scale? And it looks like to be, you can print it. And so we're actually looking really closely now at a bunch of startups that are building computers that are printed. So imagine a sticker.
And we're talking like a 3D printer, like a big clunky thing. Are you talking about like almost like a piece of paper?
It's like a print. It's like a newspaper.
Sweet God.
And so they're printing these computers, you know, with an ARM chip, hardware security built in, sensors. I'm sure they'll all be solar powered in the future. And so I'm really interested to say, okay, what happens when you have a sticker that has more computing than my smartphone? and it cost $1. We'll be there in a decade or two. Right now it's, you know, not very smart, but it, you know, it still has an ARM chip built into it. And so I spent a lot of time just thinking, what does that enable, especially on the nodal network? But what happens when you have a computer that's $1, that's really intelligent, that's kind of, you know, everywhere, and everything becomes hyper-connected? And how do you make sure that that's a world that we want to live in, and a world that's really fun? So,
and this really actually, you know, to kind of round things out and bringing things to the present, like, you know, I'm pretty sure everybody who's listening, yourself, you know, everybody at home as well, I mean, there's this wild chip shortage in the world because of, you know, all of them are made in Taiwan, and you need neon gas in order to etch these, you know, the lasers onto the chips. And now, because things are going on in Ukraine, like, you know, you can't get big exports of neon gas. There's like all these weird things. So like, there's this massive like chip shortage and this crunch. But is that going to change? And is this just like, you know, forcing us to adapt and build new forms of chips, or what's kind of going on in that world?
Yeah, it's a huge problem. The U.S. just signed an act, the CHIPS Act, I think it was last week, to mandate building of these chips in the United States, the whole supply chain. So it'll take probably a year or two. But it's a huge issue. I mean, if you want to build hardware, it's a 1 year lead time to do anything. And so that's really slowing down a lot of these other hardware projects. The beauty with Bluetooth is there's already tons of Bluetooth devices out there, and we see a lot of them with our network. And so it's a really great way to onboard and connect devices. But yeah, I'm pretty excited about, you know, domestically produced chips. I think that's going to be pretty exciting. It's going to put a lot of pressure on you know, different countries to build better products and build lower cost. So yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, there's this amazing YouTube video called that discusses this whole thing. It's on a channel called Real Life Lore, which is my new favorite YouTube channel. It's like more good information packed into a 10-minute video than an entire like college course. Oh, yeah. But it talks about how all the semiconductors are being built in Taiwan. And because of the nature of these facilities, like, China will probably never risk invading it, because if they're damaged, like, it screws China more than everyone because they're their top customer. But that same company that owns all these plants in Taiwan is now building one here in the US in Arizona as we speak. So yeah, it looks like they are going to, you know, resolve this, but it's probably going to take another couple of years before things are more readily available.
They call it the Silicon Shield of Taiwan. And so, I mean, just geopolitically, it's super fascinating. Another cool thing that people don't like to talk about is one of the waste materials for manufacturing these chips and these rare earth minerals is essentially radioactive waste, which called monazite ore, which contains thorium. And so one of the
sounds cool like a Marvel movie
chips. Yeah. One of the cool things about this chip manufacturing is one of the waste materials of it, you can actually use for energy. And so there's actually people building, you know, really powerful, really safe next generation reactors using this waste material from all these chips. And so I've actually been calling people up and saying, you know, kind of jokingly, kind of not saying, hey, you know, can I have this waste? You know, you should pay me and I'll take it away from you. And so I think there's actually a really cool business model to be made in the future for essentially gathering as much energy as you would need to power the whole United States for the next century. And essentially getting it for free because it's waste. So anyway, it's a really interesting time to be alive.
Let us know when you do a token raise for that, for sure.
for reactors. It'll be a while. We got to get nodal reactors its feet first, but there is a really interesting correlation between information and energy, which we're still kind of exploring, but it's pretty cool. So
yeah, there's some people that are even referring to Bitcoin as like this money battery, which I think is a pretty, you know, interesting concept.
Yeah.
You know, the fact
that people are bashing Bitcoin for its energy, but it's like, I mean, you know,
everything uses energy. It's like everybody like kind of poo-poos things that like use energy. But I was thinking about it the other day. I was like, man, like EVs use energy, like electric vehicles. Like, where, how does that electricity get generated? Of course, it's from like, you know, like oil.
That's what's cool is because, you know, the extent to which civilization can expand is directly linked to energy. And so, you know, you went from the Roman Empire, some people hypothesize the Roman Empire fell because they ran out of firewood. And then you had the British Empire rise because of steam. And then that fell.
Steam-powered engine.
The American Empire rise because of petrochemicals. And we're still at this age of petrochemicals. Really, it's been the past 100 years. All of our geopolitics, all of our everything has been defined by who's got the oil. And we're at the beginning of this new transition to the nuclear age, probably potentially the fusion age as well. And you know, usually during these transition periods, a lot of weird stuff happens. But we're just at the beginning of this new transition. So we have to look really, really carefully at what's happening, because things like energy will become much cheaper. Things like manufacturing hydrogen, which you can use to power jets and aircraft and all kinds of things, will also become exponentially cheaper as well. Taking seawater and turning it into fresh water is gonna get cheaper, probably at a nonlinear rate. And so all these interesting, you know, exponential curves are going to converge, and we're going to see some really, really fun stuff start to happen. So I'm extremely optimistic about the future. But again, keep an eye on that, because we are in a totally transitional stage here in civilization. So
yeah, it does feel like that. Yeah, it totally feels like there's lots of transitions, and geopolitics is just getting skewed, and you know, new alliances are being forged and broken. Yeah. And you're hearing these, you know, prime ministers or presidents come out and take very hard line stances now. And and it all comes back to energy, and it all comes back to who's going to control the means of production, you know? So it's a wild time. Garrett, we've only got a few minutes left here, and I want to make sure that I ask you a very important question. And it's basically, how do people who are listening right now get involved in the Nodal Network? How do they say, hey, I share the same vision as this guy, I love what he's doing, and I kind of want to, you know, follow along or get involved in some capacity?
Yeah. So the easiest way is you can download the Nodal Cash app and earn crypto on your phone. So we have a lot of cool features coming with it. But yeah, we've got people actually, they're Uber drivers, they're truck drivers, people, you know, mounting this to their bicycle and riding around the city. So just download Nodal Cash, check it out, earn crypto on your phone, and help participate in this network that can hopefully totally shift how the internet works fundamentally. And so, yeah, check out the Nodal Cash app. Also, if you have any crazy ideas of sensors that you might want to connect or things you want to build on the Nodal Network, get in touch. We have a Telegram group, or shoot us an email. And we would love to hear your wild ideas as to what you want to build on the Nodal Network.
Love it. I think I already see Aaron's mind churning. I bet he's going to be joining the Telegram and you know, spitting out some funky ideas, because he's also
there for like a year already. just idling though. I will have to contribute some more.
Love it, Garrett. We can't let you know how much we appreciate your time today. It's always fun getting to talk with you. And we definitely want to have you come back on the show again soon to talk about more updates. And maybe we just have like a geopolitics just special or something, talking about energy. Because I think, unfortunately, I got to that line of questioning way too late in the episode. And I'm like, I want to keep going, but we gotta let you go. I know everybody's got a hard
time. Happy to ramble about that. We think that, yeah, again, information and energy are more linked than we think. And so we think Nodal will enable some really cool economics that just couldn't exist anywhere else. So
love it, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you.